Markus Moser. We are delighted that you are here for the OpenACS CalDive package.
Well, thank you, Harald, for the introduction. I'm happy to present you the CalDive package. Georg Lehn, I did some presentation on the DAF standard. And if I remember correctly, in the second presentation by Jim, we had this this patent on web authoring, yes?
Yeah.
And the DAF standard, it's more the mid-2000s RFCs, lots of them, very convoluted. And it would probably be easier, would have been easier to implement your patent.
Well, it was very abstract.
We had some methods.
But yes. From Vienna University of Business, and maybe you were here last year and remember this building and the years before and some of the presentations.
And you also remember your great shirt.
Usually Professor Neumann is the person with the great shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might remember we run a learning management system for a large university. And yeah, one of these things that we have here is a calendar, of course, because if you're a student, if you're a lecturer, you want to log in, you want to see your calendar, yes. But this, of course, is not very user-friendly, because as a user, you want this on your mobile phone, you want to integrate this with your calendar software, yes. And this is where the CalDive comes into play. It's a standard from the mid-2000s, and it allows you to, as a client, to access and to manage calendar data. It sounds very nice and easy, and I'll show you why it's not particularly nice and easy. Yes, it's HTTP based, so it comes with some special HTTP methods to do certain operations. It also uses XML, as is typical for the standards of this age. Yes, and it's a relatively well known and well used standard, and I think many of you might be using it, even if you are unaware that you're using it. So I think Mac OS is using it, iOS, you're getting CalDive natively, some other applications, but I have a slide for that. Okay. Well, the idea was to allow the OpenACS users of our LMS to manage their calendar from their preferred clients. Because we noticed that there were even external providers of software writing bots that were scraping, web scraping our calendar content to provide somewhat to extract the data out of it, yes? And this can be done easier. And the idea was here, the main focus, let's implement the main CalDive features, the essential features. Not everything, because as you will see in my next slide, this would be quite a lot if you implement everything. And there are certain other intricacies here. Good. Why is the CalDive non-trivial? Here's a nice slide I found on this web page. It's a directed graph that shows how these standards of CalDive and WebDAV are connected. And this is just a small section of it. This is not a complete graph. This is just a part of it. So on the left, you see certain extensions. And not all of them are inside this graph. But I'm rather happy that I have this graph, because if I had placed them here, it would be already completely unreadable. Yes. So you see there are several standards here. And these are all RFCs. So there's the one RFC for scheduling, or for organizing meetings, then later the CalDive standard for exchanging contact information, and also the collection synchronization, which is a special type of synchronization for CalDive, is an extension. So there are a lot of extensions, and they don't come from nowhere. They come basically from the WebDAV. And the WebDAV itself, as you can see on the bottom, is based on standard HTTP. Okay, how does this work at all? Yeah, how does the CalDive work? So the idea is that a server application, as in our case Navi server running OpenACS, organizes calendars as WebDAV collections, and the clients can access them. And each event is basically virtually accessible as a calendar resource, ICS. This is the ICAL format for calendar entries. Maybe you've worked with it. It's basically plain text. It's very well human readable. It has some, I think, column separated values. And yeah, it's not really easy to read, but you can look through it and understand.
Yes.
CalDAV also allows multiple calendars per user, so you're not really limited to one calendar per user. And the clients can just perform HTTP methods on the calendar or the resources on the calendar to access and manage them. Yes. Now, let's look a bit at the clients. Which clients exist that users can use to access the CalDAV? Well, this is quite different and difficult here. There are several desktop clients like Thunderbird or the iCal of Apple, the Evolution for on the Linux platform. You have Outlook that can, you need to install a plugin for it, but I think Exchange can do it without a plugin. And there are some mobile clients like a syncing client for Android that needs to be installed as a separate package, and there's also in iOS it's more integrated and works out of the box. Yeah. But here's the interesting thing, that these clients behave very differently. If you start debugging the requests that come from these clients, you will notice that basically every client does his thing in his way. Yes. And you might also you will notice that there are ways that are less resource intensive and there are ways that are more resource intensive, because basically the client can say, oh, they have a calendar with 20,000 entries, please do a GET request on each of the 20,000 entries. And if the client wishes to do it, the server in some way has to comply. Or the client can say, please give me everything in a report. So the report method that can also return all these 20,000 items in one HTTP operation. Yes, but you cannot really force the client, please only do the report and not do the GETs on individual items. So this is a bit of a strain on resources of the machine. Good. Where do you find the calendar package? As I said, it depends on the OpenACS and several frameworks there. Of course, TDOM, yeah, everything runs with TDOM here. What would the world be without a TDOM? And we use the protocol handlers of the ExoTicker, which is simply the framework for registering callable methods for HTTP requests and with basic authentication. And there are also already the iCal procs that provide ways of exporting calendar items in the iCal format, in the ICS format. So this is already there. And yes, and it's about, I think, 174K. So it's not extremely big, but also not very small. Good. So here again, I list the requirements. We want to support major clients, and we want to support these major methods, and also support the standards from iCal for describing the calendar entries, this iCal format, ICS. Good. Another challenge here, it's access control. Yeah. Why? Because in the OpenACS world, if you use the calendar package, you typically have membership of, let's say, if you're a student, 20 courses, and each of the courses has its separate calendar. And for the CalDAV, you don't want to subscribe to 20 calendars. You want one virtual calendar that gives you an aggregate of all the other calendars on the platform. Yeah, I have a slide later that will give you an overview how many calendars we have, and it's quite a lot. And we also have per user, usually a user has a private calendar. The private calendar is a calendar with write access. I can also write to this, I can modify items, I can create items. And the community calendar, if I'm not an admin, is usually a read-only calendar, so I can only read it, yes? And if I try to modify an event on a read-only calendar, of course, I will get some errors. Yes. And in CalDAV, there's a so-called principle, which is simply a way to tell the client where you can find the which URL you can find the resources for this user and the resource discovery. It's also, of course, as you can guess, a big some of the performance issue, because you can have theoretically a very high number of calendars with many calendar items, yeah, and we want to respond here fast enough, so there are not some timeouts or not requests that take several seconds or even minutes. Yeah? We want to avoid this. So these are the challenges here. And now sketch out a bit the methods. So the easiest method, we know it from HTTP, is the GET method. So I can just, if I know the UID of the calendar item, then I can just access it via the request to this UID and then ICS. Yeah. I can also access the complete calendar under this URL, which is potentially quite large. I can access it with GET. I can access it also with report, as you will see on the next slide. There's the options method that returns the capabilities of the server, so the client knows what does the server support, what does it not support. And Georg already mentioned the prop find, which is just a way to ask for the values of properties. It's like attributes, and I get specific values for this. Like, what is the home calendar? Where is this located? Yeah, for the OpenSES CalDAV package, the home calendar is located in the same URL for every user, but has, of course, different content determined by the login. Yeah. And the get e tag is like a hash value that can tell you has something changed. And there are really, really a lot of these properties, so we're not supporting all of them. Good. I can also do a put and just post a single entry to the server. I'll show it a bit later how this could look like. And then there's the before mentioned report method, which gives me a feed of a calendar that matches the following specifications. I can specify the time range, for example, or I can specify some certain properties, and I get only the items with these properties. There are several ways to do a report, the calendar multigets, the calendar query, and also the sync token. Yeah? This is also related to the partial retrieves. It means I only want to sync the delta between the latest update and the current state. Yeah? So I can avoid resources, use of resources. But of course, as I said before, if the client goes crazy and says, I want 20,000 events, each in a GET request, you somewhat have to comply. You cannot tell the client, please only accept this type of report now. So here is an example for a standard prop find. Yeah? So how do we query for properties? XML with a namespace. Also fun here to mention that the namespaces can come from CalDAV or from DAV, so there can be different namespaces. Yeah, so you have to be careful.
And from the vendor.
Yes, and they can mean different things on each of them.
There are four default namespaces to handle this CalDAV.
And extensions.
Plus extensions.
So if you want to start developing, you just heard, it's a lot of fun. Okay. So here we query for the user principle, which is this this standard URL that gives me a set of properties if I query this. I query the principle first. I query this on the standard CalDAV, and then I get the URL of the principle, and this I can then query for further properties like the home calendar set. Yeah, and here I get the status 200, so we know this is good. This means things worked, and we returned this principle. And we, and also Georg explained the multi-status, so I'm not going to explain it again. Okay, this
but
is
the
yeah.
responses is wrapped in an HTTP response.
Yes.
Yes, it's also HTTP. Yes.
Yeah, because you also have the status in the top, no? Again.
I mean, it's just HTTP extended, not normally it's just if get,
yeah.
post, give also prop find.
Okay.
So whatever prop find means.
Yeah,
so here you get the 207 response,
exactly. Okay.
which indicates it's a multi-status, then you have to expect an XML file with this scheme.
Okay, so you don't have the standard header
it's
stuff.
It's not 200, it's 207.
Okay.
And then you have to more or less, there are just, you see you have one line with HTTP 1.1.200 okay, you might have hundreds of them in this
yeah.
line,
yeah.
where mm. it's just the collection of, you're updating a couple of entries, and for
yeah.
every entry you're updating, you're getting the response.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So this is not necessarily the same as the header status.
Yeah, that's what I was.
Because this is always referring to this browser.
Yeah,
it always has a
just the same syntax.
Attack.
Similar.
Yeah, and
thank
it's
you.
Related to this. And if we query for more than one, then we get many status lines.
Some of them might succeed, and some of them might fail.
Yeah. But that's still a payload of a normal HTTP header.
No, it's a body.
Sorry?
It's
part of the body
the
looking
the
down. Yeah, absolutely.
Head.
Yeah,
it's
there's a header above which is not displayed.
Okay, this is the sample for the put request. So now we want to submit an item of the MIME text calendar, iCal format, yes? So we have the attribute, the column, and the value. And maybe you've looked at this kind of things now, because usually many websites give you ICS export and you get exactly this kind of thing. Yeah? You need some start date, end date, a summary, you can set a location, description, and all this kind of things. And this is wrapped in a calendar.
Yeah, can I just also add one more thing? I mean, in many of the calendar programs have the idea you can define there your own time zone.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, okay, I define a new time zone, and it's used below this.
Yeah.
And then you send some data in some arbitrary thing, and then you have to map out from the time zone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just what you can write there is quite a long list of properties.
Yeah.
You have to interpret in detail, and unfortunately, some of the clients do their funny things. Well, you have no idea why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You're making things more complicated. And
yeah. Time zone management is often a problem.
And
mm-hmm.
painful for the client.
Yeah.
Maybe one more thing. The UID is the identifier. So this property helps the server to identify the ID of this property, of this item. Yeah. And this is not the same as the calendar item ID, which we have in the calendar items table. Of the calendar package. So there must be some bridging going on.
Yeah, it's also the painful thing. If you send this UID from the server side to the client and you edit something here and send it back, then you might get different UID
yeah.
on some calendars.
Yeah.
I mean, the Mozilla keep it stable, but Apple, for whatever reason, sent you completely different UIDs.
Okay.
And then you have to reverse mapping what I have sent, maybe to them. And
yeah.
map it back to the right number.
Don't know what to delete or replace. Yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. I think to some parts the mitigate this is mitigated by the. I think to some parts you can mitigate this by this if non-match header, which will behave differently if the item does not exist.
Yeah.
If it's not existing, it's created, and if it exists,
no,
it should be updated.
To modify entry, some of them say okay. I modify it in place, and some of them say, okay, there's a new item, but I delete later one, the previous one.
Yes, some do this, yes, I know. And then you end up with a new UID. Okay, this is a sample for a report. So again, we have an XML namespace, and then we want to get the e-tag, and we want to get the calendar data. And with this time range. and you only query for V events,
yeah, because there are also V2 dos and other types. We also want V events.
And this is what a response might look like. Yeah? We get the E tag, which is the hash that tells us has something changed since the last request. And then here wrapped within this calendar data tag, we find the ICAL item. And this can then be interpreted by the client, whatever software is being used. And again, we meet the beautiful status message. Okay. Thanks to Gustav Neumann, the package also includes 394 automated tests for regression testing. And this also simulates interactions with major clients like Thunderbird, iOS, Android clients, and macOS clients.
I mean, all of them behave differently. Mm. And the way we did the test, or I was more or less recording, just looking at one case, just afterwards, is it fine? If yes, you record the dialogue. And also the dialogue, if you make a request from the smartphone, is not one of the requests. There are potentially 20 or 100 different requests, whatever they want. I mean, you can put everything together in large requests, or you can make simple requests.
Yeah.
And then more or less, the expected answer from the side has this structure. And if you extend something in the package, certainly the question is, how many other programs I have killed by now? And what do they exactly want to have there? I mean, Marcus has not said many of the other things which are the client-specific text, which are afterwards important because, for example, location of an event has different properties. Sometimes you can put there a geolocation there and sometimes not, but they are not part of the standard and so on. Therefore, it's testing is really a pain there.
Mm. It might also change between version numbers.
Exactly.
I get a new version of Thunderbird Lightning and suddenly it behaves differently. Okay, here a bit the statistics. I promised a statistics slide, so I looked it up. We have around 182,000 private calendars on the system and about 100,000, 98,000 community calendars. Yeah, and in total about 200,000 users. Yeah, they are not always active, so the active number of users is in around the thousands, 1,000, 2,000, maybe in certain days, three or more. But this is the request that they are generating per month. So these are the kind of requests being generated per month. And we have not really actively marketed it to the user. There's just a link and people can find it through this and try to experiment with it. And despite of this, we have kind of a lot of requests. So here in March, when the semester starts, we had around 15,000. So if you, I hope you can read this. This covers the time period from July 24 to May 25. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And here in the top months, we have more than 50,000. And also in the months with the least activity, we have a little less than 20,000.
I also have to say that OpenSS and .learn was used as a major calendar management system for 20 years, but it was replaced as a major learning management system recently, I mean, 2 years ago, and it's just used only by a few users which still do not want to migrate and have content there or whatever. It's just now much less than it was before.
Hmm. Yeah, and the clients always poll each minute. Smartphone asks, is there a new entry?
Yes, it might or it might not. I mean, it's just, but you have to actively subscribe to the calendar. It doesn't get automatically. It's just for a few users which are still using it actively. Mm-hmm. I think it's, from the user point of view, I would say that less than 5% of the users are using it actively. Mm-hmm. Maybe 10%.
Yes, it's also not, it was not marketed, and it is not marketed right now. We have it around since, I think, 2019. And so it's quite mature, given the current use. of course, what we need to talk about also here is some potential bottlenecks, like the queries into the calendar tables can be expensive for the calendar aggregates, and the clients can also hammer, and there's not much one can do about it. So we discussed this before. If you're running a server and you suddenly have thousands of clients subscribing and hammering your service, this is not so easy to handle. Yeah? But I think you could put this into a pool of requests, a request pool and these kind of things. And this should also then be managed. Okay, what are the limitations now? So it looks like a very polished implementation, but in fact, of course, it supports only certain attributes and a small subset of the entire CalDAV standard. So the aim was to support the major client and not to implement the whole RFC and all the extensions of it. Yeah? And there's also the possibility to have something like complex syncing operations, which are also not fully implemented. So the basics are there, but it's not fully done. So if you feel like implementing it, then please go ahead. And we also don't support appointments and invitations, which are also in today's calendar management software quite used extensively. Yeah. And as I mentioned, queries can become quite expensive if the calendar is very large. If I have 20 years of calendars on the system and many hundreds of courses, it can be quite a couple of megabytes, such a calendar. Okay, what is the outlook here? What can be done? So, we support currently basic authentication, yeah? But of course, one could ask, why can you not support OAuth 2 or another form of authentication? Of course, this also could be done. Yeah.
But having the smartphone, whatever, you synchronize it, do what they do, and none of them have OAuth. But, I mean, the only reason we have the basic authentication is because it's the usual way of doing it. The subscriber's calendar does basic authentication. But we have OAuth in the system, but there's no reason for doing it because we have no way to test it on a real time.
And as I already said, the collection sync is not fully supported because we need to store the tokens and the deltas for it, which we currently are not doing. Yeah? Okay. So this is my last slide. I hope I didn't blow the time frame too much. And I also want to thank the people who contributed to the package, Antonio Pisano, Gustav Neumann, and it's a long story, but this used to be, I think, two students that started working on this. There's not much from them left in the code, but they gave the basic direction and the basic idea. Okay, they wanted to do, calendar management.
Yeah, I think it was a bachelor thesis or master thesis, and one of them was working on calendars, the other on to-dos, and one was flow into the work.
Okay, so that is the calendar package. Questions?
Thanks a lot, Kate.
Do you think it would be possible to separate some of the features from the OpenACS specifics and contribute it as a TCOL package of some kind?
Yeah, I would say it's feasible, but not for everything.
It can be done in two ways. One can make a NaviServer package, right, many parts, and whatever the text parsing thing could be. I'm not sure if it's getting easier afterwards if you collect parts which would fit together from many places. But certainly, I think most of the part is not OpenACS specific. I mean, certainly the calendars per se, just with this calendar ID, how you find events, how you query events, and how you search events, whatever. This comes from there, and you always have to the interface question. Or to, I mean, it needs a programmer at the end who says, okay, here's the delivery side, and I take this library here, and here's the source side, and
passing and replying.
And exactly, you have to construct it, and you have passing. There's two ways, and two ways is also going to the content repository or the event storage is there, and this is some kind of a game. So I think the overlapping part between client and server is specifically the iCal reading and writing. Yeah. Yeah? So I think that would be the package which should be created in Qtk, yeah, and then adapted or used in Navi server so that both sides speak the same language.
But the item is over two things. One thing is the kite part, and the other one is the with the XML around it, and the XML around it is already auto. Okay. For example, it's also some is more than this as we use it. I mean, and as it's useful for scalability. You can do everything in your digital professional about this, but it's you have to reinvent many things which are there. And also passing, you can also pass in without it on, of course, but namespaces or whatever is getting to be a pain. You should be yourself.
I'm only reading about the file of the iCal.
Yeah, this is
that's the only thing I think should be kind of, mm-hmm, of
I mean, also I have to say that I had it not installed the package on opss.org, and now I remember the reason for. I mean, with the options, you're advertising some methods, and if you're advertising methods, you have immediately some hackers or some automatic tools which start picking around system and right, the hammering on it immediately. I mean, putting it on the public server is also something which is maybe not everywhere.
Yeah.
But it also you can restrict it. I mean, just also with the context constraint I mentioned there, you can say just keep everything. It does not, it's not advertised for the outside world, it's just for the inside world, and then it's fine.
We implemented options in Navi Server 1.0
yeah,
as a way to see if the Navilink method was available or not. Of course, none of that exists still, but I mean, that was from way back when. So,
but if you, I mean, it's also
you, that's a way that you're going to probe the system today. So close that up.
I mean, the system getting hammered from mm-hmm, some from clients, and there's always some kind of a. I mean, you can figure out what are the principles here in the system from the protocol, and then you're revealing more or less 25,000 users that are in the system, which are not allowed to do. I mean, it's also from this side becoming problematic in the general case because of the resource discovery allows you to do this. And if you take it out, people will complain why it's not finding my files or whatever. It's just, it's not completely hassle-free.
I want to try to take it out only for bots. To some extent, bot detection works, and if the client is coming on a bot thread, then don't advertise the options.
Detecting bots in general is also very hard, as you say.
I think to operate this, you definitely would have to meet the context extension you programmed in, and to put all of these requests specifically in a slow pool. So that's on the server side, the operation edition.
Yeah, so I learned a lot. For me, I only know them as files. So everywhere I download a file appointment, I get it per email. So for me, it was always files. I didn't know that there's a protocol behind. And how does, I would say, OpenCloud, NextCloud handle that? In our company, we only have a flat file, and all calendar entries are one after the other. So that's how we
I
do
I mean,
that.
The simplest thing is simply having the ICS files,
yeah,
and uploading ICS files to this calendar. Downloading is completely without problems. This
yeah,
is the easy part.
So Nextcloud is using the Sabretaf library, which is a full-fledged calendar server.
Yeah. Okay.
And to just deploy for each user, you
yeah,
just deploy the database. Mm-hmm. So that's a pre-made product, which is very mature.
Okay.
That's how they integrate it. They don't write it themselves.
Yeah.
I think they have one or two extensions.
But for instance, I think also not even Nextcloud support arbitrary client.
Yeah.
I mean, the Windows one in particular is very nasty. They extended it to the point it's almost completely incompatible. And one from macOS is also a bit weird. So the Nextcloud also, so it's the best out there probably, but they also don't support all of it that is out.
Perhaps it's not necessary to support all.
But all features, I mean.
Yeah.
And the standard itself is where I need you have, you can do journal taking or memos of the meetings. It's integrated in the standard. You have, you can have to-do lists, and you can make hierarchy between the different items. But that's poorly explored, and everybody does it the same way.
I think they have all the geographic positions. Like so many fields over there, it's insane.
And Apple has its own way of doing it, probably because they want to be
apps.
You say, I don't care if some other client is not displaying it, but we display it in the way that we want it to. And you can have an app there, whatever, and it just. But you have to deal with it. At the end. You get the data back, and you have to preserve it at least, not destroy it.
Yeah, but fact is that Apple is the only company who is using, since the inception, is using this standard. So Microsoft has had their own synchronization and API. So they contributed in the, initially, but then they went away from it. So as I said, if we can find uses and for it and make it useful like this ticket tracking, time tracking or so, then it will use, but otherwise it will.
Okay, great. Markus Moser.